And now, your go-to source for year-round fantasy hockey advice, DFS and betting coverage. This is NHL Fantasy on Ice.
What's good, everybody? Pete and Nick back with you. NHL Fantasy on Ice here for our next season preview episode. It's Mock Draft 2.0, baby. What's going on, Nick? We're inching closer to the start of the season, and things are starting to feel real right now.
Yeah, starting to get a good feeling, and there was no better feeling than getting together on a Sunday night, knowing my disdain for football, and that's back. And we assembled a crew of the best, the very best for Mock Draft 2.0, Pete. We got James Harding, we got Anna Dua, Davey Satriano, yourself, and me. Put it all together, and you got one hell of a fantasy Mock Draft 2.0, don't you?
So, Nick, the format's a little bit different this time, right? We got 20-team rosters instead of 16. We got 10-team draft instead of 12-team. So we got five people involved and two teams apiece. So you got 200 players instead of the 192. But we incorporated a utility spot. We incorporated three different forwards at each of the positions. So three centers, three left wings, three right wings. And then you look at the top of the draft, not too many huge surprises in the first round, guys. But I think the big one was that Nick was able to snag Austin Matthews at number five. And it boiled down to Anna picking Nathan MacKinnon from maybe a safer team over Matthews. What were your thoughts on that pick, Anna?
Just what you said, Pete. I feel like at the end of the day, this year, I'm considering the schedule a bit more than I have in years past. And the Toronto Maple Leafs have a tougher schedule this year. Nathan MacKinnon, I don't think you can go wrong with him. He's third in the NHL behind only the first two guys in this draft, Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, and points over the last five seasons, 442 in 338 games. And when he's out there, he's producing points. So I just had to roll with MacKinnon in this one.
Yeah, it's fair. I won't lie. I was rather happy to get Matthews at five, Marner at 16. I did some quick math, combined for 95 goals, 108 assists, 203 points last season. So suffice it is to say, rather happy with those two selections. I think we should go around the horn first and foremost and lay out sort of the draft strategy, right? From Mock Draft 1.0 to 2.0, general philosophies and maybe how they've changed. Davey Satriano, we can start with you off to James Harding after that.
So I've actually done a league like this for a while, and I actually like it because it's pretty much like an NHL roster almost. You have three lines that you're kind of rolling out every night, three centers, three left wings, three right wings, four defense, two goalies. And with the one utility slot, it kind of makes it, you know, you'll always have a forward there pretty much that you can slot in. So what I like to do is I like to get one extra of each position player. I'll do five defensemen if I can, because I always like to make sure, you know, when they're off, you'll be able to fill the D. It's harder than the forwards. And if I can get three goalies, I will. I was actually able to get three for both my teams, which I was kind of surprised, because when there's 10 teams, you know, if you're looking at three goalies each, that's 30 goalies. So towards the end there, it got a little tough, but that's always my strategy. I like to have a full roster, make sure I have every position that I can slot in when, you know, there's off teams are off.
I don't think anybody did better in the first three picks of this draft than James, waiver wire James, Connor McDavid, number one, Roman Josi, number two at pick 20. And then on the wraparound, Sidney Crosby. So Sid and McDavid and Roman Josi, three of maybe the top 10 players when you really look at it big picture, regardless of team. But James, a lot of faith in Roman Josi to replicate what he did last season. The other two guys are automatic with Connor and Sid.
McDavid at this point, I mean, that pick was such a slam dunk that probably one of you could have made the selection for me.
I did.
You know, I was a little late to the draft, so. but yeah. You know, when you look at it, I mean, the value of getting a guy like Josi, who, you know, we know the kind of season that he had last year. He you know, made a great argument for the Norris Trophy, which ended up obviously going to Cale Makar. And, you know, it's hard to argue that. But, you know, you saw the production that Josi is capable of. And I think that Nashville actually got deeper this season. So it's entirely possible that Roman Josi could easily be a point-per-game player again, and is going to be one of the top two or three defensemen. So, you know, you always want to try and get like a player at a premium position, like defense or goaltending, because you know the kind of depth that you're going to be able to have. Obviously, you get the number one pick, and a guy like McDavid is right there. You're never going to pass that up. But, you know, the ability to have, you know, Josi at 20, which I'm not sure if in a lot of drafts he's going to be available there. And then to wrap around and get Sidney Crosby, and then two, you know, rounds later, I was able to get Sebastian Aho, even, you know, so a center depth of, you know, McDavid, Crosby, and Aho. I don't think you're really going to see that normally, but I think with the structure of the league that we had here and the fact that there was such a premium on trying to fill in those other positions, especially the wing depth, you know, that's why I saw a little bit of a slide there for a guy like Aho. And I may not have picked Crosby if I knew that Aho was going to be there at 46, but the ability to get those three top players, you know, was too hard to pass up.
And Davey, during the draft, you made a good point, an astute point. And we saw this in Mock Draft 1.0, but as James just mentioned, a lot of the centers were starting to drop. What was your theory on that?
So we always mention how there's always a lot of centers available, but in this kind of thing, you obviously need at least three and probably more. So I kind of wanted to make sure that I got them out of the way early, which I think in one of them, my teams, my first pick, I took Vasilevsky, number eight, always. And then after that, I kind of was like, you know what? There's some centers out there that I want, but with 10 teams, there were so many guys. One of my centers teams, I don't like too much. I have Shifley, Thomas, Beniers, and Brock Nelson. So clearly could have done better there. But to me, this was just a totally different thing because, as you said, like with the amount of centers that we need and we've used to seeing, we always like let them fall. But this was a lot harder than I, you know, thought it was going to be, even though we only had two teams this time.
Chiming in here, I did the exact opposite of Dave in this draft, even though we did get a bit feisty towards the end with him taking every single player I wanted for the last few rounds. I actually based this draft off of position scarcity because, like Nick said, we have so many good centers. We have so many good dual eligible players who can slot into center that you can get in later rounds. So I did take two eligible centers in the first round, but in my second round, I took two defensemen. So I took Victor Hedman for one of my teams, Adam Fox for another one of my teams. I really stacked up on defensemen and goalies early. I think both of my teams have three goalies who, if not all are starters, at least five of the six are starters. So I think getting that out of the way for this one and picking up on some players who I'm pretty happy with in the center position later was my strategy here in this one.
Positions are really important for sure, Anna. And I'm going into this, or at least I went into this with this strategy. One of my teams, I wanted to get either Shesterkin or Vasilevsky. I took Shesterkin over Vasilevsky just because I think he maybe even has a higher ceiling than what we saw last year in the years to come, considering his age. And then, of course, on defense, if I was picking in a different spot, I would have made sure that I prioritized getting one of the top four defensemen in Cale Makar, Victor Hedman, Adam Fox, or Roman Josi. And Fox is another one of those Ranger guys. I know those Ranger guys were all over the first two or three rounds, right, with Shesty and Fox and Panarin and Zibanejad. I mean, do you guys think that Fox is the best Ranger skater available this year? Nick, what are your thoughts on that? Because I know you're big on these defensemen and some of their upside. And to me, I think Fox stacks up with anybody at the position, even Makar. We saw it in the playoffs.
Yeah, it depends on rankings. I'll be honest, in my rankings, I have Artemi Panarin as the highest ranked New York Ranger. But I think among defensemen, I think if you're looking for value, I think you're looking at Adam Fox because you're looking for touches and attachment, right? Zibanejad, even Vinny Trocheck. You're looking for that puck to go around on the power play. And who's a better QB in this league? I mean, he's a shortlist type of guy in terms of running a power play in this league. So I think he's going to be involved again in the Norris conversation, James. It's pretty simple and easy. If Adam Fox is available, I think you have to go after him because I expect a big year from the New York Rangers.
Yeah, and I'm a little indifferent on the Rangers this season. I do think that Fox obviously is one of the top fantasy defensemen, easily top five, probably even top three at the position up there, I think, with Makar and Josi. My concern with the Rangers this season is so many of their players last year had career seasons, which got them to that point. You saw, you know, Panarin had a career high. Zibanejad had a career high. Chris Kreider almost doubled his previous career high in goals scored. And obviously we saw what he did on the power play. So I'm still saying that, you know, Panarin and Fox would be my top two ranked Rangers players. I could see a little bit of regression from all of them this season, but I still think they're worthy of being selected where they were in this draft.
Everything on Broadway is spearheaded by Igor Shesterkin. And I wanted to get into the goalie debate because, Pete, this is something we've noticed, you know, even from Mock Draft 1.0 to 2.0, just the position and just the fluidity at which picks can come. We'll talk about a goalie run later on in terms of third stringers. But, Petey, you took Markstrom at number 22, I think maybe a bit of a reach. Who knows? I mean, I think Calgary can have a really, really good year. And after Petey discusses that, Davey Satriano goes Marc-Andre Fleury at 38, which I believe in that pick because I think Fleury is going to have a monster year. But off to you first, Pete.
Right. So Fleury was one of the biggest reaches. I also, I think, took one of the biggest reaches taking Kyle Connor at 14. Mm-hmm. It felt a little high, but Kyle Connor, sixth in goals in the entire NHL since his first full season, 2017-18. So the performance, I think, and he doesn't rely on any line mate. I think we saw that last year. So I'm very comfortable taking Kyle Connor in the top 20. But yeah, you look at the run on goalies, it felt really high taking Jacob Markstrom at the beginning of the third round. And I think that plays even more into that strategy. If you have a pick in the 6 to 10 range and you can get Igor Shesterkin or Andrei Vasilevskiy, don't think twice about it because you can go to sleep at night knowing that that was a pretty solid pick. Whereas reaching for a guy in the third or fourth round that has some question marks like Markstrom, like Jack Campbell, like Saros and Sorokin, you don't even know if those teams are going to make the playoffs. You maybe can't lay your head on the pillow and sleep as good. So again, don't think twice about taking either of those goalies in the first round.
So Nick, you mentioned I took Fleury 38th, yep. Which I agree with you. It was a reach, but this guy's done nothing to prove to me that he can't get it done every single year. It doesn't matter what team he's on. It doesn't matter who he's playing in front of, who he's playing with. And he's one of those guys that, you know, he's not going to start 60 games, but he's going to be in more than just a timeshare. So some guys that I took him ahead of included Ottinger, Hellebuck, Jari, on that same team later, which I was proud about. But to me, Fleury's just one of the most consistent fantasy players for the last like 15 seasons. And I said, you know what? I know what he's going to get out of him. Do I know what Hellebuck's going to deliver this year? I don't. Do I know what Fleury's going to give you? Yeah, probably around 30 wins, you know, 230, 240, save percentage, 910, whatever it is, a couple shutouts. I'll take that any day of the week.
I believe in Fleury as much as I believe in your new haircut, Davey. So don't worry about that. I'm all around the Minnesota Wild this season. Some eyebrows are raised, and including my bushy ones, Alexander Georgiev, I took him 76. I think he's going to be the number one. But Anna, curious to get your opinion on that pick and also goaltending in general. We know how volatile the position has become the last couple of years, right?
Absolutely. It is a very volatile position. I think that was a pretty fair pick. I think you snagged him up at a pretty good point. I know there is a bit of concern whether he's going to be the sure shot number one starter or Francouz is going to come in. Francouz does have more proven starts, more proven ability in the NHL so far. So he is another good goalie option. I think that Colorado team is so strong, you can't really go wrong with choosing either of the two. I was a little bit surprised circling back that Pete left Freddie Anderson for me early on. I think Freddie Anderson has to be one of the safest fantasy choices across the board. I mean, that Carolina Hurricanes team, it's tough for me to think of a stronger team. Even with Max Pacioretty out likely for the first half of this next season, he was just an added bonus. They improved with Brent Burns. They have a talented top line. They have a lot of young players like Seth Jarvis, who had a great year last season, who are probably going to have a great year against this season. So I think Freddie Anderson, especially because he was so consistent, like 35 wins, 922 save percentage, I like taking him third. And I don't think you can go wrong with making sure you get a goalie in as soon as possible.
I would have to agree with that sentiment there, because you definitely can see that there's a sharp decline after you get outside the 5-6, maybe top 7 at the position. And the interesting thing, you know, the strategy that I employed, and it wasn't necessarily by choice, it was just kind of how the board fell to me, was I wanted to make sure I got that absolute, you know, top tier guy. And on, you know, my two teams, one of them I had Jake Ottinger at first, and then the other one I had Jack Campbell. Certainly, I think both of them are going to be top 10 at the position this year. I think that Campbell has a chance to even finish top 3 at the position this year on Edmonton. But I think that, you know, you go into a draft like this with two strategies. One, you're going to try and get two bona fide studs and you're going to go after them really early, or you get one and then you try and get like a mid-range handcuff. And that's kind of because of how the board fell. I had to do my goalie strategy with both of my teams, is I got my one guy, but then because of how the board fell, I got Bobrovsky and Knight, and then I had the LA Kings duo on my other team to secure a handcuff with both. But that's also a risky strategy just because there are certain nights where, you know, two of your goaltenders might not be playing, or even all three of your goaltenders might not be playing. So, you know, the different strategies there. And I think we all, to an extent, employed both of them, depending on the layout of the board and what team we had.
My concern with Freddie Anderson is not the team. I like that team a lot, and I like the thought of them getting back Max Pacioretty at the, you know, halfway point of the season, even three-quarter mark, and it making them better from a Stanley Cup futures appeal standpoint. But the reality of the situation with Freddie Anderson, I love the player, fellow Dane. He's missed significant time each of the past 2 years. Last year, he missed time down the stretch, fantasy playoffs. If you had Anderson all year, you were in a great spot, but then you didn't have him for the most important time of the year. And the year before, he was limited to 24 out of 56 games in 2020-21. So just a little bit of my concern. If I'm taking a goalie that early, I want him to be a workhorse. I want him to play, you know, 55, 60 games, something like that, like a Saros. And I don't want to have to worry about injuries if I can help it.
Yeah, sadly, I mean, the position has just become that way. And we talked about volatility, but I'm right there with you. I'm always iffy of taking Freddie Anderson. Number one, again, he's allergic to the playoffs, whether it be fantasy playoffs or the Stanley Cup playoffs. When you need him the most, he's just not there. And I hope that changes here in a contract year, but I'm totally with you. I think obviously there's some value down the depth chart, even like a Pyotr Kochetkov with the Carolina Hurricanes. From that conversation, guys, I wanted to jump into Patrick Kane. I think one of the more polarizing names right now in fantasy hockey, more so because of the lack of depth around him in Chicago. We joked around it while we had this draft, like who the hell is going to pass in the puck? And that's a fair question, right? Even Seth Jones, I think, went like 200th overall. So Anna, we can start with you off to Dave after that. Patrick Kane falling to 34 in mock draft 2.0. How high would he go on a contending team is the question. I would argue he's a top 20 pick, right?
He is a top 20 pick. He could even be a top 15 pick if he was on the contending team. I mean, Patrick Kane is still a phenomenal player. He produces himself. It's just when you're drafting teams, when you're drafting teams with such big rosters, the way we did in mock draft 2.0, you tend to want to stack up some players. I had stacks on both of my teams. And with the Chicago Blackhawks, it's just Patrick Kane standing alone against a tough schedule. I'll say that time and time again. So for me, I was staying away from him. I wasn't picking him, even though he was on the board pretty late, just because I thought there were better options. I wanted to get those stacks in. I had a Detroit stack. I had a New York Rangers stack. I had even a Columbus Blue Jackets stack, who I think are top heavy and maybe bottom heavy if Merzlikins has a good season this upcoming year. But just because I was focused on that, Patrick Kane wasn't on my radar on a contending team. I say top 15 player.
I say maybe even top 10 if he was on a team like the Oilers something like that. Yeah. I'm not going to throw out too much speculation, but I actually got Patrick Kane and Evander Kane on the same team because I'm liking what Evander Kane brought to the table last year. He was on like a 40 plus goal pace since he joined the orange and blue. So I'm excited about Evander Kane. And then Patrick Kane, if you do your draft the week of the start of the season, obviously keep tabs on if and when and where he's traded to. If you do it now, you can kind of get that type of bargain value. So that's the stance on Patrick Kane right now. Remember how bad Chicago was last year. He was a minus 19, still had 92 points. How many guys in the whole league had more than that? It's pretty remarkable what he's able to do at age 33. And he's entering his contract year, of course. That's why we're talking about him potentially being traded.
For me personally, regarding Patrick Kane, I was ready to take him in the fifth round if he fell that far. He didn't. I mean, you guys all mentioned it. I don't care who he plays with. He's going to score 92 points. The plus minus isn't going to be there. He'll have everything else. So to me, if he was slipped a little later, I would have taken him. But, you know, as far as right wings go, Pete, you took Timo Meier, who he's got the right wing, left wing eligibility. I thought maybe it was a little high at 42, but because I don't think he's going to score as many points as Patrick Kane on the Sharks, but I guess the teams are kind of in a similar boat. So if you're going to have Kane high, I guess Meier shouldn't be that far behind, right?
Well, Meier had almost 80 points last year on a bad team and has a ton of shots on, ton of shots on goal, 300 plus last year, had career highs across the board, regardless of his team going into the tank, pardon the pun. But yeah, I think like Timo Meier covers hits as well. And I was surprised that he wasn't in Nick's top 100 overall players in his rankings on sportsnet.ca. But I understand, Nick, if your team concern for Timo is the problem here.
Yeah, they're coming at me with pitchforks on social media. And that's what happens when you put out lists and I'm ready for it. Just bring it. To be honest and to be fair, yes, I'm going to readjust my list a bit. I'm going to send something out updated this week. I think I got to move Meyer up a bit. Having said that, you're right. Like if you have a Logan Couture ranked around 180, 190, I know Hurdle's probably going to be the guy. William Eklund might have a good rookie season. I just can't get to that level where I'm drafting Timo Meyer top 50. I would expect maybe a bit of regression. So I apologize to all the Timo Meyer fans out there. James Harding, why don't you pipe in on this conversation?
Yeah, I was very surprised when Pete pulled the trigger on that. When you look at what was transpiring on the board and some of the names that were still available there, I mean, you had Gabe Landeskog went the pick right after that. Chris Kreider went exactly right after Landeskog. So the next two picks were probably wingers that a lot of people would speculate would have better seasons. And then you had Jake Gensel, Johnny Gaudreau, and Alex DeBrincat, who went within the next 10 picks. And I think that you can easily make the case of all five of those wingers going before a guy like Timo Meyer. So I think it was, you know, I mean, kudos to Pete on having the faith in a guy like Meyer. I would have pulled the trigger on one of the other five in that spot if you're really looking for, I think, an impact wing at that spot in the fifth round.
I'm going to pipe in here right now and be a Timo Meyer defender because okay. I'm very high on him as a player. I mean, the stats don't lie. He had 326 shots on net last season, which is third in the NHL. He's still producing despite the team he's on. Pete took him before I could get to him, so I went and took Tomáš Hertl as my utility player in this draft just so I could get a little bit of Meyer's production. And Hertl also had a 30-goal season last season, largely because he's playing again with all-star Timo Meyer. Like, he's an elite player. If he was on a contending team, he would be up there in the conversation we just had about Patrick Kane. How high would I rank him? Maybe also a top 15 player in the league just because he can produce. And so even if he might regress a little bit, I think his production is still going to be very solid. And I like that reach for Pete.
And one other thing about some of those names you mentioned, James, like I totally agree with you in hindsight when you look at a Gensel or a Landeskog. Those guys are super safe. You know, Landeskog's going to be playing with McKinnon and Rantanen, and Gensel's going to be playing with Crosby and Rust, guaranteed. But when you look at some of the other names you mentioned, like Chris Kreider, Johnny Gaudreau, I mean, those guys might be regressing this season with, of course, Johnny Gaudreau no longer playing with Lindholm and Tkachuk. He might be playing with Patrick Laine and a center to be named later. And then even Alex DeBrincat, you don't know how good Ottawa's really going to be. And Chris Kreider, I saw he had more than double the number of tip-in goals than anyone else in the entire league last season, even compared to like a Pavelski. So, I mean, is that going to continue? Is that sustainable? We'll see, but maybe Chris Kreider is more of a 35, 40 goal scorer instead of a 50 plus. So that was kind of my rationale in looking at some guys that might regress here.
Yeah. I love fondue. Don't get me wrong. I just don't know if they're going to let me in Switzerland anytime soon after what I did to Timo Meyer. My goodness, the pitchforks were out, but certainly it's a fun debate. It's a fun conversation. And I'm with it. And off the top of my head, I was thinking, guys, too, and David, we can start with you. Would you rather, you know, invest in some stock in San Jose or Chicago? Because I think that seems to be the consensus around the table that the Hawks are falling. And I know there's only a couple names you're probably looking at, but Patrick Kane, the resume speaks for itself. And I don't know about, like, I understand to an extent he gets paid lots of money and there's no one to pass the puck to, but I expect a bit more, David, from Seth Jones this season, no?
Yeah, I kind of agree with you there. I was surprised. I think at one point, James was like, is Patrick Kane the only Blackhawks player drafted? And it was like, what, the 15th round or something?
It's crazy,
and
yeah.
I think there were more Kraken and Sabres drafted at that point. So I do get a rebound for Seth Jones. Gets tons of minutes, power play. He gets all the opportunities. So, yeah, and especially when we need four defensemen each, Jones is a guy that I probably would have taken a little higher than where he went in this draft.
Davey had maybe the best defenseman stack I've ever seen. He got Cale Makar and Devon Taves. I mean, those guys play together. My goodness, it doesn't get much better than that. I got embarrassed the other day. I ran a poll who has the best defenseman duo in the NHL, and it was like 92% those guys, and even the others didn't even crack 10%. So those guys are as good as it gets. I found it hard for one of my teams to sneak in some of those defensemen. I had to really pick some guys in the mid to late rounds. One of my teams, I took Mackenzie Weegar at 67. I was wondering, guys, and maybe let's start with James. Are the Calgary Flames really as good as they were last year, or maybe better after these couple of moves, Kadri, Uyghur, Huberdeau, or are they getting a little overhyped a little bit? I mean, they did lose a lot in Tkachuk and Gaudreau, and there were still five Calgary players taken in the top 70 overall. So curious to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, it's prisoner of the moment syndrome, right? They make a big splashy trade, trading Tkachuk. They lose Johnny Gaudreau, and everybody's saying, oh, the Flames are done. You know, there's no coming back from this. And then, you know, they get Huberdeau, they get Uyghur. You know, that back end just got significantly better. I mean, you have Uyghur and you have Rasmus Anderson, who I took on one of my teams, and I'm, you know, a huge fan of him taking a step forward this season. So, you know, I think that that back end just got even more solidified. And of course, you add a guy like Kadri, and it's wait and see on whether or not he can, you know, produce like he did last season. Obviously, he was playing with some pretty decent players in Colorado versus potentially some of the guys he's going to play with in Calgary. But I don't think it's overhyped to say that when you look at the team that they have and the structure that they play, adding, you know, the guys that they did, they easily will still be, I think, a top four, top five team in the Western Conference. And I think that they're going to have a number of fantasy relevant players. So, you know, six, seven, eight guys going in the top, you know, 100 or so from them. I don't think that's necessarily that much of a reach.
Unintended, people are fired up about the Calgary Flames in Canada. And in fact, even in this draft, Pete, as you referenced, five Flames went in the top 70. Anna, you went with the Lindholm-Kadri stack. How good are you feeling about the Flames right now?
I'm feeling great about the Flames. I think they really recovered from the way they started their offseason. They lost two big pieces and they came back. They got Jonathan Huberdeau. They signed him to an extension. I'm very high on Mackenzie Uyghur. I think that's a great pick just because he's been such a phenomenal even strength player over his past few seasons. And then you take a look at this Calgary team, he's going to get the opportunity to play on that elite first power play unit possibly for the Flames, which is just going to up his point production. They have a solid goalie. Pete reached for him as well in this draft. So we see a lot of these Flames players going high, but rightfully so. It's a very solid team throughout the lineup.
All right, I need a public defender right now. We got resident Devils fan Davey Satriano here. I'm hot and heavy over Dougie Hamilton bounce back season. I'm ready to take this guy like 75 overall if I have to. I took him again. I think I took him in mock draft 1.0 as well. I took him 85. Do you feel the same way, Davey, about Dougie Hamilton year two with the Devils?
Yes, you know, he got injured last year early on with his jaw. He missed a lot of time, but we know what the guy does. He's, you know, he's obviously playing on a young team, but they got some stars, Heischer, Hughes, Mercer last year. Like, they got these young guys with the Palat coming in. He'll help out on the power play or wherever. He was one of the top defensemen, you know, top five for a very long time in fantasy. He led the league in goals a few years ago even. And I thought he would have done better last year point-wise. You know, I'm not saying the plus-minus or the power play just because the Devils is part of their system. But, Nick, I wouldn't say I'd go as far as, you know, 75 or 100. But, yes, if I had to choose one Devils player that I want on my roster, player, any position, I would choose Dougie. So I agree with you.
Okay. I got some guys a little later that I feel a little bit more comfortable about compared to Dougie Hamilton, who went at 85. I got Evan Bouchard at 99. I got Rasmus Dahlin at 102. I really liked what I saw from him second half of the season. And if he's going to be out there with a lot of Buffalo's young talent, even if they're a bad team, I think he's going to put up a lot of garbage points. And I think Dahlin might eclipse 60 points this year. And then we were surprised at how far Shea Theodore fell. Nick got him at 111. I got Charlie McAvoy. I'll take 60 games of Charlie McAvoy scoring like 0.75 or more points per game. If I could get him outside the top 100 overall, I think I got Charlie McAvoy because of his injury concern. He's coming off surgery and stuff like that. And I just think that Charlie McAvoy as a third or fourth defenseman is as good as you could ever hope for, even if you have to wait and see for a little while. So I thought there was some good value on defense, and maybe the reach for Hamilton is a little shaky, but he does have that ceiling and always among the league leaders in shots on goal among defensemen. So I get the risk reward factor, Nick.
Just piping in here, I talked a bit earlier about how much I was considering stacks in this particular draft. And for me, two teams I was debating stacking were the New Jersey Devils or the Columbus Blue Jackets, because I was taking a look at those fringe Metropolitan Division teams that if they can get it together, can they compete for that last spot to sneak into the playoffs? Maybe. I ended up rolling the dice going with the Columbus Blue Jackets instead. I got Johnny Gaudreau and Elvis Merzlikins on one team, and on the other team, I got Patrick Laine. So I took a couple of the big names from the Blue Jackets. I got Dawson Mercer pretty late for the New Jersey Devils because I'm a pretty big fan of his, so I wanted to get him in there. But I want to hear from Nick first, which team would you rather go for right now with the way it is so far and the way last season played out, the Columbus Blue Jackets or the New Jersey Devils?
I'm going with the New Jersey Devils. I just think there's a lot of flaws on that Columbus roster. I guess Boone Jenner is the number one center right now. There's obviously some players that I think can evolve into that position, but they're relatively raw and young up the middle. I like what New Jersey has put together. Obviously, I felt high enough to take Vitek Vanacek on my team. I'm not sure how I feel about that. I'm actually prognosticating a bounce back season for Mackenzie Blackwood. I like the Andre Palat pickup, and don't sleep on my boy Jack Hughes, who I think when things are all said and done could be a top 25 fantasy player this season. So I think I believe a bit more in the New Jersey Devils, but I think Columbus James is going to poke around this season.
They're easily going to be there. You know, you look at what they have. I mean, they do have a lot of firepower. Obviously, they traded a guy like Oliver Bjorkstrand to Seattle, and we've talked about that a couple of times since that trade on previous podcasts. So I think that that's definitely going to hurt the middle six there, especially if they employ Gaudreau and Laine on a single line and they don't keep them separated to kind of try and spread out the firepower a little bit. But I do think that they have some very useful pieces there. I mean, a lot of us are high on Cole Sillinger going into this season. Maybe Kent Johnson coming off of the great, juniors that he had. So, maybe he gets some kind of an opportunity. Don't forget, they still have Zach Werenski, who's one of the best goal scoring defensemen in the league over the past, few seasons. So, I definitely think that they still have some pieces. My thing would be, are we going to finally start to see, that regression in net? Because I still don't know how much we can fully trust the goaltending tandem that they have there. But I think they have the offensive pieces, especially at the top end, where, I'm not afraid to take a run at some of their guys.
I agree with what James said. I think it's interesting how he brought up Oliver Bjorkstrand at the start in regards to talking about some point production Columbus lost. I noticed towards round 11, pick number 103, Dave took Matty Beniers from me. And that's where we started to see people take first line players from teams that aren't necessarily contending teams. And it happened rather quickly. So you saw Matty Beniers go off the board. A little while later, you saw Bjorkstrand, Burakovsky. And then all of a sudden you see targeting top line players who are going to see a lot of minutes on these teams. A pretty solid line, I think, number one line for Seattle with Beniers, Burakovsky, and Bjorkstrand. So I want to know, how high would you take players who are going to play those big, big minutes and have produced points in the past are on a solid line, but not a contending team, Nick?
I think that's a really fascinating conversation to have, because obviously you get into sort of the depth type of players from the better teams, if you will. So I think right around that area, to be honest, I was even looking at Matty Beniers today, and I think I have him ranked 127 right now. I'm willing to get up to 100 because I think he's going to be involved in that conversation for the Calder Trophy. And we like the shock value too. Every year there seems to be a couple rookies that are mainstays in the top 100. Last year, Mo Sider. Every year there's a couple different players that I think get involved in that conversation. So I'm right there with that, because I think you got to remember, somebody has to score on these teams. We talked about San Jose. We talked about Chicago. We haven't really talked about Arizona, but there's a couple files I would go around there. How do you handicap it, Pete?
I mean, some of my favorite picks of this whole draft were a couple of us reaching for players that we really like individually, regardless of the fact that they don't play for that great of a team. I think one that jumps out is when Anna took Jacob Vrana, one of my favorite players and teammate beneficiaries of this season. We have him on our sleeper list because he's been going outside the top 100 overall, but she took him at 97, and I like the confidence there. And then in the same round as Matty Beniers went, Davey, I took Mason McTavish, and you could see that maybe that's a reach. But if we're projecting that those two guys could go race to the finish style and maybe both eclipse 60 points for non-playoff teams and make the Calder race a little interesting, that's what I'm banking on here. So that's why I took McTavish not too long after Beniers went. I didn't want to lose him. I didn't want somebody else to get him.
Well, it's good you took him where you did, because I was going to take him next, and I actually had to settle for Trevor Zegras there. But so this was the 11th, 12th round where we start to see some of those players going. Keep in mind, it was 20 rounds here. You know, because of how big these teams were, I feel like, I don't know about you guys, Pete, you kind of mentioned it, but I was more of looking at guys who aren't as much safe as, oh, you know what? We're going to need some pickups at some point. Let me go for a guy that could have a good year. And if he doesn't, there's 20 players on my team. I can cut him when I need. So there was some of those guys, you know, you mentioned McTavish, Beniers, the guys that were going up there. I just kind of thought in 11, 12, 13 round range is where I was going for some reaching for some players. Cause I felt at that point, 10 rounds in, you kind of have the base of your team settled. So to me, that was kind of a fun point to try to, you know, mix it up a little bit.
I find it so funny that Dave just said that he had to settle for Trevor Zegras right after Mason McTavish, because I remember when Pete made that pick and Zegras went right after him. I don't know if it was you, James, you can pipe in here anyways, about, we were pretty shocked. We were like, oh, you're taking McTavish over Zegras. Zegras led rookies in the NHL in points per game last season with over 0.8 per game. So he had a pretty good season. He was in that Calder Trophy conversation and McTavish still went above him. So I want to hear your thoughts, James, first on whether you thought that was the right order to go in.
I was very surprised at Pete taking that McTavish pick there, because like you said, I mean, they have Zegras, they invested in Ryan Strom this offseason. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, where they slot in, you know, down that middle there. You know, obviously McTavish, you know, has played center, he's played wings. So, you know, they may even play just Zegras and McTavish together, but I'm not 100% sold on some of these rookies just yet. And it also depends, like I said, where they slot them into the lineup and who, you know, they're playing with. I would have felt much safer going with a guy, you know, like Zegras there. I did love the Beniers pick. So, you know, I'm more comfortable with a guy like him, where I know he's definitively going to be the number one center and he's definitively going to have some top tier line mates versus the question marks that are still surrounding, you know, a team like the Ducks. And then Pete in the next round too, grabbed another rookie back-to-back picks and snaked from me Logan Thompson, who I was trying to get as my third goaltender on that team. So Pete, I want to talk to you. Like you seem to be, you know, very, very invested in A, taking a couple of reaches with your draft, and B, also targeting some rookies right around there. You know, do you feel like a lot of players are going to be targeting Logan Thompson, even higher than that, just because of the team aspect and the fact that we know Robin Leonard's not coming back this season?
Well, I mean, hey, I needed a number two goalie. I took Shesterkin in the first round and then I addressed everything else and I forgot to get a number two goalie. So Logan Thompson's my number two. Didn't feel great about it. So then I picked Jordan Binnington as well. Love him or hate him, he's a threat for 30 plus wins, especially if he bounces back. He had a really underwhelming regular season last year, but was really good in the playoffs. And had he not gotten injured, maybe they would have taken the Avalanche the distance in that series against the eventual champion. So my goalie trio in that league was Shesterkin, Thompson, and Binnington. I'm not super high on any other rookie goaltenders. I know there's Kochetkov. I know there's UPL with the Sabres, a couple other guys maybe you could take a flyer on in a deep or a keeper league. But the reason why I took Thompson is because he's probably the 1A, maybe the clear starter for a team that should be at the very least a fringe playoff team in Vegas.
And Pete, time flies when you're having fun. I couldn't believe it's been a year since the consensus favorite pick to win the Calder Trophy was Cole Caulfield, right? And then Mo Sider sort of came out of nowhere. Pete, how would you handicap this year's crop? Like, obviously, the sexy name is Matty Beniers. We just talked about with Seattle, Mason McTavish. But I know you have your eye on a couple defensemen, right?
Yeah, I really like especially what Jake Sanderson's going to bring to the table. Owen Power, same type of situation. I also think, as much as we were talking up on the previous show about, you know, some of these sneaky picks around the league and teams that could go from non-playoff team to playoff team, if we like the Winnipeg Jets and we like the coaching change impact, that's why I took Kyle Connor in the top 15. And I would also lump in Cole Perfetti. The guy has some incredible numbers in the junior ranks, fared pretty well in a second or third line role last year when it was a coaching disaster. Now he's got Rick Bowness there. If anybody has forgotten, look at what Rick Bowness did the past 2 years with players like Jason Robertson and Rupe Hintz. He made them, you know, definite point per game players when healthy. So I think he's done an outstanding job with the young talent in the Dallas system, making them into big names. And I'm curious to see what the ceiling of Perfetti could be. Maybe even Calder Trophy winner Cole Perfetti if the Jets make the playoffs and he scores 30 plus goals.
Davey, how would you handicap the rookie conversation this year?
I kind of think it's actually going to be one of those defensemen. I'm not sure if Power can quite, you know, get there with the numbers in Buffalo, but I really like Ottawa with what they have. Sandstrom, if he plays enough and, you know, can, if he can get the experience and quickly adapt. And I think to me, he would be the guy that I'd say is definitely a top three. I put Beniers probably also up there, but to me, yeah, I give the favor to the Senators defenseman.
Are we sleeping on Juraj Slafkovský and maybe Shane Wright? And I'm curious to get your thoughts on that. Cause you know, I'm putting together a list for sportsnet.ca top 10 rookies to watch right now. And they're sort of the forgotten names, right? Maybe it's the recency of the draft and maybe it's some of the other names in this rookie class, but it seems like not a lot of people are high. And is it because we don't know fully if they're going to be NHLers this season, Anna?
That's the biggest reason. I think there is a bit of uncertainty about where they're going to slot into the lineup, if they're going to slot into the lineup, if someone like Slafkovský is going to start the season in the AHL, if he's going to start it with the Canadiens, where he's going to play. I think he has a high upside. I was just in Montreal having a conversation about this, and of all the comparisons I've heard so far, Slafkovský reminds me a bit of Rick Nash. And Rick Nash obviously had a decent rookie season with the Columbus Blue Jackets, and I could see Slafkovský having a very similar year if he does play the full 82 games with the Montreal Canadiens, but they did fall a little bit. I took Shane Wright right there at the end. Burlington King had to represent. So I took him at the end just in case he does slot into the lineup, but I'm leaning towards the guys who have NHL experience. I don't think Mason McTavish has gotten enough love in this Calder conversation just yet in this group. I know he's getting a lot with our fans and listeners on Twitter and stuff, but I mean, he has to be the front runner right now after that World Junior Championships. He just played some great hockey. I saw those tweets about him being in like the Canadian history moments, and every single time I see him, that's all I think of, is him having one of the best, if not the best, World Juniors play of all time. And if he brings that type of energy and feistiness to the NHL, he's my pick to win the Calder this year.
I'm just going to jump in here. Bold prediction. Logan Thompson will backstop the Vegas Golden Knights to the playoffs and win the Calder.
Ooh. You and Pete just love Logan Thompson. Like, I don't know. I think Vegas is a flawed team. I think Thompson's going to be good. I got him ranked like 149, but to think this guy is going to be the savior for the Vegas Golden Knights, I think they're headed the opposite direction that Seattle's headed. Seattle's headed upwards. Vegas is going downwards. So why, Pete, defend Logan Thompson, please. Cause I wonder about this every day. I stay up at night watching the Sopranos thinking about it.
Well, yeah, Vegas as a franchise is trending in the wrong direction the past couple of years, but I just think like for them to have missed the playoffs last year, the only way it could have happened is if they got decimated by injuries, and that was exactly what happened. So give me a healthy Vegas squad. I still think they're not done yet. I mentioned on the previous show, I like that defense in front of Logan Thompson. I like the power play benefit that Bruce Cassidy could bring for guys like Eichel and Theodore and Mark Stone and Marchessault and all those guys. And then I just think a healthy Jack Eichel, if he scores something like 85, 90 points, they should be okay. So that's kind of my rationale. And it's one of those things like Georgiev. I mean, Georgiev's a different situation, but he could get 30 plus wins by accident. I think Logan Thompson could get 25 plus wins by accident because the team is pretty strong around him and pretty well-rounded.
Yeah. And I would say, like, look at what Vegas is rolling out defensively. Look at what Cassidy did last season with Linus Ullmark and a rookie in Jeremy Swayman. So he knows how to manage a rookie goaltender. And when you look at Vegas's defense, I would make the argument that it's deeper than where Boston was last season under Cassidy. So I think that the structure that he's going to bring to this team is going to help them. They're still going to have a guy like Mark Stone, who's one of the best defensive forwards in the NHL, playing premier minutes. I think you're going to see a better two-way game from Jack Eichel this year now that he's you know, fully healthy and gotten his feet back under him. And you know, we do know what that middle six for Vegas can be. So, you know, I would say that you could make an argument that Logan Thompson is going to have a better season this year under Cassidy than a guy like Jeremy Swayman had last year under him in Boston.
So if Logan Thompson finishes as a finalist for the Calder Trophy, I will apologize on these airwaves right here. Marco Rossi, by the way, is my sleeper for Calder. But let's go around the horn and wrap things up here. Mock Draft 2.0. Davey, just any final thoughts on what you put forth with your two teams?
Yeah, I like what I did with my second team better. I think I had the depth at every position was more balanced. But I'm just going to go over my two favorite picks here. In round 15, I got Pavel Francouz, who, as everyone knows, I think that Joe Sakic was still on the Stanley Cup high when he made that ridiculous trade and also that ridiculous proclamation that Georgiev is going to be the starter. I don't see it happening. So anyway, I took that nice goalie there. We know what he can do. And in the last round, I somehow got Phil the Thrill Kessel. I don't know how he was still there, but I think he's in for a rebound year because, you know, the situation, he's not in Arizona. He's on Vegas. He's kind of rejuvenated. But all I can say is I was having a great Sunday. My Mets won. My Giants won. I sign on. I put my GM cap on and I go into the draft. And I don't know. I guess I must have been reading Anna's mind because I picked every one of her players and I don't want to see her in the office the next time because I don't know what's going to happen to me. I'm kind of worried, actually. But other than that, it was good. I like my teams. I think we did a good job.
Joe Sakic, I mean, let's have a little respect here, right? The guy built a champion that might repeat this year, even though they lost some key names. And I think he's in good hands with either of those goaltenders. And I also like the little stealth move. I know James does as well. They signed Evan Rodriguez to a one-year contract today, just before the show dropped. So they have three nice center options. I took one of them to play number two center after the departure of Nazem Kadri. I took Alex Newhook in the final round of the draft. If I could do it over again, I might consider a safer option like Evan Rodriguez, who had a good shot volume last year. And we mentioned it on a previous show, right, James? JT Compher can't be slept on either. He's maybe the safest option of all. So which direction, now that they signed Rodriguez, which direction do you like most for Colorado, James?
I still think right now it's going to be Compher, and I would still probably take a flyer on him, you know, in the late rounds, and that's exactly where you want to target a guy like him, you know. And I was a little surprised at some of the guys who, you know, did go late in that draft. I think, you know, Nick had a great late round pick with Tom Wilson. You know, you stash a guy like that on IR for a handful of months, and he comes back and he's immediately going to slot, you know, into a powerful top six for the Washington Capitals. And, you know, you just have to remember that there's a lot of depth out there at some of these positions. I got Nico Hischier in this draft on one of my teams in the last round. I got Dylan Strome and Oliver Bjorkstrand on my other team, and Boone Jenner, who right now is projected as the number one center for, you know, the Columbus Blue Jackets. Those are my last three picks on one of my other teams. So, you know, there is a lot of depth. Anna took Gustav Forsling as her second to last pick on one of her teams, which I think is a crazy steal at that point in the draft, because I think a lot of people are going to draft him much higher just because of, you know, the fact he's probably going to be on the top pair for the Panthers this season, and maybe even running, you know, their second power play. So, you know, there is a lot of depth out there. And I think that's what, you know, you have to remember once you get out of that, you know, top 100, 120, you really have to start looking at the, you know, the middle six for a lot of these contending teams, and you're going to realize that there's much more depth. And like I said, a lot of those guys I just pointed out are going to be top line players too on even some teams that people aren't, you know, considering. Seth Jarvis being one of them has a chance to play on the top line for the Carolina Hurricanes. So, you know, just have to remember that there's a lot of depth out there. And you just have to be, you know, willing to look through and find it.
Yeah. All in all, I felt the same way. I was able to find, you know, a lot of value, uncover it, depth as well. I was banking on some bounce back files like Barzal and Wheeler and Hamilton, Seguin, Hellebuck. I don't think you want to get too wrapped up in that conversation, but I think you have to hit on a couple of those guys, contract your guys as well, and they'll take your team a long way. Anna, we need a rebuttal on Davey's remarks and just your final thoughts on Mock Draft 2.0.
I think James teed me up quite well as well. Dave did take literally every single person I wanted. So I will be having a conversation with someone, Pete. I don't know who chose this draft order, but the next time we do this, there will be some words that are exchanged. I told Dave
it wasn't me.
I told Dave he has to sleep with one eye open this week, and I stand by that statement. But right at the end, I think the universe rewarded me a little bit with what James said. I did get Gustav Forsling. I got him pretty late. I got him 184th. And I really like that because we started off this podcast talking about Mackenzie Weegar on the Calgary Flames. Now, who fills that spot on the Florida Panthers? And Gustav Forsling is that guy. It's a solid team. So I was very, very happy with the way it turned out. I got some picks like Dawson Mercer pretty late. James let me have him because he knew better, unlike Dave. So I think I did pretty well towards the end there, but I'm pretty happy with the teams that I collected. Could it have gone a little bit better? Sure. But you know what? I think all of us had pretty solid teams across the board. Love this format. I think it gives our listeners a lot of good opportunities to find players in different positions that they could target as well. So pretty successful draft in my books.
Definitely. And there was one team that jumped out to me that a lot of people seem to be underestimating, the Nashville Predators. People forget how good that offense was. The power play was tied for fifth in the NHL last year. And they only got better this offseason, right? They got it better defensively. If you're wondering about Saros in the early rounds, I think two of the biggest bargains in the draft were Philip Forsberg and Matt Duchene. I got Duchene around 120, even though he scored 43 goals and had 86 points. I mean, my goodness, even if he comes down a little bit, sign me up for Matt Duchene there. And I wanted to also mention Nito Niederreiter, I think is a good, he didn't get drafted here, but that's a player that covers hits that could be playing in the top six for Nashville, and was very quietly, he led the Hurricanes in 5-on-5 goals per 60 last season with a pretty star-studded group of teammates. So Nino goes and joins up with his countryman, Roman Josi. And I just feel like Nashville in a up for grabs central division. Nashville might be the second best team in that central division behind Colorado. I don't know if people think I'm crazy, but that's how I feel right now.
No, I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it. I think you look at the other teams around them. Like, I think it's Colorado than everybody else in that central. As you know, by now, I'm rather bullish on the Winnipeg Jets having a bit of a bounce back. I made it abundantly clear with my picks of Wheeler and Hellebuck and guys like that, that I'm feeling a lot stronger about Winnipeg than other people, but I'm open to that conversation. I just think, you know, people are expecting a bit of regression from some of these guys on Nashville, and that's why for the most part they're staying away from the Johansons, the Duchenes, the Forsbergs. But I think clearly you can find a lot of value, Davey, right now.
Yeah, I was really surprised. I think Josi was the fourth or fifth defenseman that went, and I'm thinking, you know, he had 90 something points last year. He almost hit 100. Okay, you know, he's not going to hit 100 this year probably. But to me, if someone took him ahead of Makar or right after Makar, I would have been fine with that. So, but yeah, some of the, like Forsberg, I think in our draft also went pretty low, which I was shocked about because, you know, yeah, the guy scores 30, 35 goals every year. But I agree with you there. There's definitely value to be at.
Well, guys, the last 24 hours have been a lot of fun. Davey Satriano, James Harding, Anna Dua, thanks so much for helping us out with Mock Draft 2.0. Tie a bow on this one, Petey.
So thanks, everybody, for joining us. Go back and check out, if you haven't already, listen to our other season preview episodes of Fantasy on Ice, stat projections, rookies, breakouts, keepers, sleepers, and deep sleepers. Mock Draft 1.0, if you want to see where guys when in differing order compared to this mock, which you can find on nhl.com/fantasy. And then if you're looking back at off-season moves, we broke all of them down in depth on our first two shows of the off-season. So check those out. Leave us a review on Spotify and Apple Podcasts to support the show. For Anna, Davey, James, Nick, talk to you next time. NHL Fantasy on Ice. We're getting closer to puck drop. Can't wait.